Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Pistons. We are back after a hiatus during the summertime there, but now we've got a new host, and that would be me. My name is Matt Shook, and I'm a lifelong Pistons follower. I've been a sports writer for nearly 15 years now at various publications and have always followed my Detroit teams from afar, like so many of you have. I'm a Central Michigan guy and originally from Royal Oak, and I've always been considering myself as a bit of a hoops head. And we'll get to know each other more as time goes on, but give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H underscore, or on my Facebook fan page, so maybe this relationship between us can start to feel a little bit more real. But now I want to get started on the Pistons, because that's why you're here. But first off, a little bit of housekeeping to get you ready for the 2017-18 season. The preseason slate begins on Wednesday night. That's going to be at 7 o'clock Eastern at the new Little Caesars Arena against the Charlotte Hornets, which is the same team the Pistons will open the regular season against on October 18th in downtown Detroit. Programming note for the fans is that the Wednesday game against Charlotte, along with the Friday night preseason game against Atlanta, and then again on Monday night against Indiana, those games will be carried live to stream on Pistons.com or also on FoxSports.com/Detroit. After that, the team will then hit the road for two road games for the preseason at Toronto and Milwaukee. And after those five preseason games are done, they're going to be off and running in the regular season 2 weeks from Wednesday night. So, of course, we got plenty of coming up, and we're going to get to all those storylines for Stan Van Gundy's team as they are in training camp right now. We're going to start talking about those ones tomorrow as we get ready for the debut of Little Caesars Arena in terms of a Pistons basketball facility. But first, before we do that, I want to use this first one of my podcasts on the Locked On Pistons Network to kind of close the Palace of Auburn Hills in a proper way. The podcast has been off as the building officially closed last week with the Bob Seger concert. I saw Bob Seger a few nights before that in Grand Rapids, had a great time, and of course he played all the hits and brought the energy and did a good job in touring Michigan and closing the Palace last week, as he did so many times over the years. I think it was 17 sold-out shows, I believe I read, and a lot of great memories for concerts. I saw Springsteen there. I saw a couple other concerts there, and of course some Vipers games, some Safari games, other things like that. Some Detroit Fury games, and of course the Pistons were the main anchor of the complex for so many years. It opened in late 1988, and the Pistons won a championship in the first year. So what I wanted to do before we get into this year's version of the team is kind of take us through my opinion of the top five memorable Palace moments that involved the Pistons, obviously. Before we get into the top five, maybe I went through the list and kind of did a little bit of a honorable mention of three that kind of stood out, and these could have easily squeezed on to that top five list, there's no doubt about it. But as far as the honorable mention ones, I wanted to go with Scottie Pippen's migraine. Remember, that's 1990 of the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 7. Michael Jordan and the Bulls were trying to unseat the Pistons as the Beasts of the East, and Scottie Pippen came down with a migraine before the game, didn't play, and of course the Pistons move on to the championship, the NBA Finals, for the third straight year, and ended up winning their second straight championship that season. Of course, the bad boy memories that we all have from back in the day, if you're old enough like me to remember those. Honorable mention number two, let's go with the end of the bad boys era. This is a bad memory, of course, for Pistons fans, losing after getting swept the following year by the Bulls in four games in the Eastern Conference Finals in 1991. And Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer leads the crew off to the locker room before the game ends. I remember I was driving home from up north with my family on a Sunday, Listening to that one on the radio and hearing how Isaiah and Lambeer and some of those guys left without shaking hands of Jordan and them as they cruised on to the NBA Finals. Another bad memory for Pistons fans is the third and final one for my honorable mention is the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Detroit Pistons in 2007's Eastern Conference Finals. That was Game 5. Series was tied up 2-2 at the time, and of course, LeBron James had his coming out party that year in his third season with the Cavs, the teenage phenom, who kind of became a man really on that night, scored the final 25 points for the Cavaliers that night, including 29 of the last 30 for Mike Brown's team as they moved on to the NBA Finals after a Game 6 win a couple nights later in Cleveland. But that Game 5 win kind of took him to a whole nother level on his career, and obviously we know what has transpired since then. So kind of the crowning of a king in some ways, I guess you could say. I got that as my honorable mention last one. So going on to my list of the top five memorable Pistons moments, and I'd be interested to hear if you guys agree or disagree with the list or maybe feel like I've forgotten something along the way. Hit me up on Twitter if you got any thoughts in that way, or on Facebook as well, and we can kind of keep the discussion going on social media. Lord knows that there's a lot of worse things we could be doing on social media during these days. So talking Pistons and some of the glory days is a pretty good way to spend your time, especially as the season is about 2 weeks or so from getting underway. So number five on my list, and again, these are only Pistons moments that have to do with the Palace. You're not going to get a Michael Jackson concert or anything like that. So we're going to go back to May 14th, 2004. This was Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals between the Pistons and the New Jersey Nets, with the series tied up at 2-2 coming into the game. This is a Friday night at the Palace. Of course, this is before the Chauncey Rasheed and Ben Wallace team Pistons had ever won their championship, which would come a few weeks later. But it looked like a lost cause at the end of regulation. But just in front of half court, Chauncey Billups takes the inbounds pass with about 2.6 seconds to go, takes a couple dribbles, gets right across half court. Kerry Kittles, who's covering him for some reason, backs off, and Chauncey throws up the prayer at the buzzer, like I said, about a step and a half in front of the half court line, knocks it down at the regulation buzzer, gets the Palace going crazy, and sends the game into overtime. Mr. Big Shot, with one of his biggest shots of his entire career, really puts his stamp on that series and that playoffs and that moment. Of course, we all remember later on that the story ended up being Brian Scalabrine for the New Jersey Nets, as the game went into overtime, went into a second overtime, then went into a triple overtime, with the Nets actually ultimately winning that game. Maybe you guys don't remember that, but the Nets did win that Game 5, 127-120. Scalabrine scored 17 points off the bench, including knocking down all four of his three-pointers, with most of those, if not all of them, coming from the corner wide open. So Scalabrine gives the Nets the 3-2 lead in the series. Detroit goes on Game 6, wins in New Jersey, and then rolls up the Nets in Game 7 to move on to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they would run into Indiana there. So that was my fifth biggest memory for the Detroit Pistons at the Palace. Moving on to number four, we're going to go with June 19th, 2005. This was Game 5 of the NBA Finals. The series, again, another bad memory, another Game 5, another time that the series was tied up 2-2 coming in. And this was the San Antonio Spurs against the Detroit Pistons in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I think we all kind of agreed that those were the two best teams in that playoffs, and they went head-to-head. Of course, we remember that the Spurs took care of business in Games 1 and 2, rolling up the Pistons easily to take a 2-games-to-love advantage in that series to start off. Pistons come home for 3, 4, and 5, as we remember back then in the NBA Finals was a 2-3-2 format. So the Pistons made it happen for themselves and really rolled up the Spurs in games 3 and 4. So we had a game 5 where the Pistons were on home court, their last home game of the season, no matter what happened. And they led. So they led, and the game ended up being tied up in the closing seconds of regulation. Tim Duncan goes up it's really all up to him. He's right in front of the rim. The buzzer's about to sound. He rushes a little bit, goes for the tip-in, misses it, and the game goes to overtime. And from there on, It's bad memories for Pistons fans. The team actually takes a 4-point lead in overtime. They're up 95-91 with about a minute and a half to go. And that's when Big Shot Bob, Robert Horry, continues his amazing playoff legacy and comes up with some amazing plays despite being nearly 40 years old, hobbled with a shoulder injury. I was watching it on YouTube a little while ago today. Al Michaels and Hubie Brown just going nuts about Horry. If you're a fan of basketball, kind of looking back, you can appreciate what that was like. Maybe now in hindsight, I know like many of you, I was dying with some of those plays that Horry was making. I was actually spending the summer in East Lansing that year watching with some good friends there, and we were just livid at some of the things that transpired. On that possession where the Spurs were down four, Horry, with the shot clock running down, pump fakes on a three, realizes he's got the lane open, and dunks with the left hand as Richard Hamilton tries to take the charge. So he gets an and one, brings the lead down to two, and actually missed the free throw. Couple possessions go back and forth a little bit there. And with 9.4 seconds left, Popovich calls a timeout with the Spurs getting the ball and draws up a play for Horry to inbound from the left wing there. He passes it into the corner for Manu Ginobili. Tayshaun Prince is trying to go around a Duncan screen on the baseline, and you see he's held up a little bit there. So Rasheed Wallace, who was covering Horry, steps over to the corner, kind of an instinctual play that is understandable in some respects as a basketball player, because you see one of the top clutch players in the league going to be possibly wide open in the corner. So Wallace heads that way. But, of course, we know in hindsight that the main mistake he made is he left the most clutch player possibly in basketball history to step right in bounds, find his spot on the left wing extended there, and casually get to where he needs to go. Wide open, Robert Horry steps in and knocks down the three, giving the Spurs the lead. Richard Hamilton on the ensuing possession after a Larry Brown timeout puts it up from the elbow in front of Tony Parker, tries to get the win at the buzzer there, doesn't fall, looks for a foul, and it was rightfully not called. Pistons lose game five, go back to San Antonio, down 3-2. Of course, we remember that they won a big, gritty game six. Nice win there, and then lose a slugfest in game seven. Robert Horry ended that game five with 21 points. Spurs win 96-95, and then it all kind of goes from there. History lived on from there. Number three on the list of most memorable moments for the Detroit Pistons at the Palace of Auburn Hills, going back to the NBA Finals on June 8th of 1989. This was game two of the NBA Finals. Going back a year before that, it was when the Pistons took on the Los Angeles Lakers in the 1988 NBA Finals and lost in game seven on a controversial finish after the phantom foul on Bill Laimbeer against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar led to the winning free throws, and that was followed by fans from the Lakers running all over the court as the Pistons tried to put up a game winner. That was one of my earliest memories as a sports fan, is watching that game in game seven of 1988 and going back and watching a lot of the videos and reading up on that series. It seemed like those teams were kind of destined for a rematch, and we got that in 1989 being the first season of the Palace, back in those days when Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, dear friends back then and to this day, kissing before every game on the cheek. And I remember when Magic announced his HIV positive diagnosis, it was kind of a story around the Detroit area as whether Isaiah Thomas, from those kisses before the games, does that mean that Isaiah Thomas is HIV positive as well? I'm happy to report that he is not, in case you were still wondering from 20 so years ago. But for the 1989 finals, bad news for basketball fans and Lakers fans, but good news for Pistons fans was that Byron Scott, their shooting guard, was ruled out of the series with an injury. And then, of course, in game two, the teams are going back and forth after halftime, and that's when Magic injured his hamstring in the third quarter and gave the Pistons a big advantage at the end of that game two, already leading the series 1-0 with the game one win a couple two nights before. So that's when guys like James Worthy and AC Green and Kareem tried to step up and will the Lakers to a road victory before headed home. And Worthy was on the line down two with 2 seconds left with a chance to knock down two and tie the game, send it to overtime, but he missed it. And the Pistons ended up hitting some free throws and getting the 108-105 victory, sending the series back to L.A. with a 2-0 lead. Of course, Magic comes back and tried to play Game 5, played 5 minutes and started, but it just wasn't working for him that day, and he would be out for the rest of the series. That Game 3 is when Joe Dumars made the big block of David Rivers, who was trying to tie the game with a late three-pointer, landed on both of his – Joe blocks the three-pointer, lands on both of his feet, and jumps up real quick to save the ball, and while in the air, turns and sends it to Bill Laimbeer under the basket to secure the win. Just an amazing defensive play by an amazing defensive player. And then Game 4 would be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's final NBA game. The Pistons win Game 4 and their first championship in franchise history and got the big win there. So that was the number 3 moment. For number 2, we're going to the Game 5 of the 2004 NBA Finals. This was on June 15th. Detroit fans remember this as the first ever 5-game sweep in NBA history as the Pistons routed the Los Angeles Lakers in that one. Of course, lost Game 2 there in Los Angeles, but dominated the series pretty much from start to finish. And it was the third NBA championship for the Pistons in franchise history, but the only one that the team would ever win at home and clinch at the Palace of Auburn Hills. I was at Gasoline Alley in Royal Oak watching a small TV in a packed bar. Wasn't the greatest viewing venue, but everyone partied in downtown Royal Oak until the wee hours. And then I got up the next day at 5 a.m. to intern, as I was in college at that time, and intern for the Jamie Samuelson and Greg Brady show the next day on WDFN. And then a couple days later, also helped out at the WDFN booth for the parade, throwing out shirts at Hart Plaza to all the fans. So some great memories there. I'm sure you all remember where you were when you watched that 2004 NBA championship team that finished off that nice run that they put together with the title. And, of course, it would continue a little bit longer. Some might say it continued a little bit too long in some of those years. But that game, if you don't remember, was a little bit closer of a final score than maybe some of us remember. It was 100-87. The Pistons really put it away in the second and third quarters. And the Lakers fought to the end. They outscored the Pistons by 10 points in the fourth quarter to close to that 13-point final margin. Fittingly, the only players in double figures for the Pistons that night were all five of the starters, Chauncey and Rip and Tayshaun and Rashid and Ben Wallace. They were all in double figures, and none of the bench guys were. Of course, that was the core of Larry Brown's team that year. We all knew as Pistons fans that that one was over when the human victory cigar, Darko Milicic, came in for the final few minutes, and then he broke his hand. So he was out for training that summer, ended up derailing his career a little bit, but we'll always have the memory of that Game 5 victory in 2004. And then, of course, we had memories of what would happen with the rest of Darko's career, which was not so great of a memory for Pistons fans going forward. Moving on to number 1 of the most memorable Detroit Pistons moment at the Palace of Auburn Hills. And I apologize in advance to Pistons fans who wanted more happy memories, but thinking back, it's really no doubt that this is the most memorable night in Palace history. November 19th, 2004. You remember where you were, no doubt. The Malice at the Palace. The Pistons taking on the rival Indiana Pacers. 45.9 seconds left in the fourth quarter of a decided game. Ben Wallace takes it to the basket, gets fouled by Ron Artest pretty hard, and comes back with a retaliation and shoves him, sending Ron Artest backpedaling quite a bit. Eventually walks back to the scorer's table and takes a snooze in front of Ricky Mahorn and some of the radio and TV guys. The ESPN Mike Breen was doing that game live nationally. And that's when our boy John Green throws the cup and hits Artest, and it was on. As you remember, Steven Jackson and Artest and others ran into the stands going after the young kid that they thought was the person who threw the cup, but it was actually the kid, unfortunately, standing next to John Green. It was a friend of mine's cousin, actually, that there was that young man that Artest went after. John Green, in the blue shirt, ends up throwing some punches, lands a little bit on Artest. And Jermaine O'Neal, we remember, was on the court, and a Pistons fan ran on the court, and of course, Jermaine flattened him real quick. And then as the Pacers tried to escape, Pistons fans are showering the team with beer, and then we knew that David Stern would be throwing down the suspensions after that. Artest got 86 games, which was the rest of the season, and he lost $4.5 million in salary. Steven Jackson got 30 games. Jermaine O'Neal got 15 games. Ben Wallace was the biggest culprit for the Pistons. He got a six-game suspension, and there were a few more scattered suspensions in there as well. This changed the NBA in a lot of ways. There was no leaving the bench for fights after this at all. That David Stern and the league got real strict on that. And the Pacers as a franchise were never the same. That year, they were the team with the momentum. If you had to play out that season without this fateful night, you got to believe that it was probably the Pacers that were going to end up playing the San Antonio Spurs in the 05 finals. Of course, we'll never know. But Indiana fans have a lot worse memories of than Detroit fans of that night. And, of course, John Green ended up serving a 30-day jail sentence. He had quite a rap sheet already going into that. And I'll remember watching that when I was up at school for that. I was covering some Friday night football at the Morning Sun newspaper in Mount Pleasant. Was back in the office by the time this happened. And it just turned into the only thing that everyone was talking about that day. It was a little bit pre-cell phone era, not as much texting. You probably had the prepaid phone or something like that your parents maybe let you have back then. But it was all anyone talked about. I remember John Saunders in the studio show afterwards. Rest in peace, John Saunders, who was a former Western Michigan hockey player. And he just went off on Pistons fans. I wasn't a big fan of John Saunders really after that. He was good at what he did, but it wasn't really my guy after just kind of saying Detroit fans are idiots. Detroit fans, have no class and all that. And it kind of let a couple of the players in the studio show really go off on what they felt was players being wrong in a situation where fans were out of control. Obviously we've all seen sporting events where fans throw some stuff and we've seen players being able to restrain themselves and not run into the stands or do anything like that and be professionals and millionaires and all that stuff. So hard to believe that the ESPN studio show would take the complete version and the side of the players in that situation, but that's what we got. And I think as Detroit fans in all sports, it kind of, we've seen our teams, our Detroit Lions, get disrespected by referees and the media in a lot of ways, but I think that was one of those times when the fans themselves got disrespected by the media, and I think in some ways it brought us closer to that team and that group of guys that ended up getting back to Game 7 of the NBA Finals that year. But that seems like a long time ago now as the team tries to recover going forward in Little Caesars Arena. And like I said, starting with tomorrow's podcast, we're going to have plenty about the new Pistons, the 2017-18 Pistons, as we open up a new era in downtown Detroit. The team's going to be downtown for the first time in nearly 40 years. And I know we're all excited to see the arena, the team, a little bit of some changes with Avery Bradley coming in, but some urgency shown by the core as we need big seasons from Drummond and Jackson and Johnson and some of those guys going forward if this team is going to get back in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But we'll have plenty of time for that before the season gets started here on Lockdown Pistons. So that'll do it for today as we kind of look back on the Palace. Thanks for spending time with me today. And that's going to do it for my first edition of Lockdown Pistons. We'll have much more tomorrow about your Detroit Pistons. Again, this is Matt Shook, and you can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, which is S-C-H-O-C-H, and then another underscore after that. You can find me on my Facebook fan page of the name Matt Shook as well. So thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.